As Matt said, this is our second last week in our Hebrews series, and we've been looking at the heroes of faith, as mentioned from there. It's been a really exciting series to look at the Old Testament in the light of the New Testament, and look at some of the stories and the way they use that story. So tonight's no different. We're going to be bringing a few of those ones together tonight. Now, a few years ago, I started off this message the same way. I want to ask a question of you guys. If you could have any superpower, what would it be and why? Name a few out. Flying, Jake. How to grant wishes. That's an odd one. Like a genie, like Aladdin. Kind of stuff there. Flying, invisibility, you know, like that sort of stuff there. Really cool. For me, it's not really a superpower, but it's something that helped me out a lot, is how to understand women. And it is because 40 years, I'm 40 next year, and I still don't understand them. I still don't understand you guys. But we're complex. Everyone's complex. Women are complex. Guys are complex as well. Now, some people say guys are pretty straightforward, but I can tell you in my job as a chaplain, a youth worker, exactly, guys are pretty complicated. Guys aren't straightforward. A few stories, just this last couple of weeks or so, I dealt with a girl that was inconsolable regarding her boyfriend who didn't understand what was going on. Now, her boyfriend just bought a new motorbike. I was spending more time with the motorbike rather than her, and so she didn't understand why that happened. And I had to go to explain. I said, look, sorry, you know, us guys are stupid sometimes and silly and we make silly choices and like everyone does and they're like that. And then story from my own, like in grade three, I think it was in grade two or grade three, I liked a girl, but I was shy back then. I was really shy and I didn't know how to talk to her. And one day she was away for a couple of days at school and she came in with a cast on her arm and she sat next to me. I was all nervous. I didn't know what to say. And she's talking away to other people as well. And she turns to me and says, how do you think, what do you think of it? I didn't know what to say. I froze. So she was obviously waiting for a response. I didn't know what to say. So I hit her on the arm. I said, does this hurt? And of course it did. She started to cry and I got sent to the principal's office. Now, I don't know why I did that. As I said, I was probably a bit shy and nervous, and guys, we don't think that straight sometimes. I'm not saying all guys would do that. I was in grade three, but we're all complex people. And guys and girls are complex people. And we're flawed as well. We're not perfect. And, you know, the message of this series is that God doesn't want perfect people, He just wants faithful people. And so we are all flawed. We've all got different things about us that aren't quite right, that I stumble a bit. And that one thing, talking about superheroes, one thing that fascinates me, now, I'm not the biggest superhero fan in the world, but one thing I do like is that they're not all perfect. They've all got some sort of flaws in different ways, some sort of weakness, some sort of arch enemy, nemesis, whatever happens, they're not completely perfect. For example, Superman has kryptonite. I had to go to my list because I'm not too sure what else. Thor without his hammer and Aquaman out of water. That was my cartoon when I grew up, Aquaman, it was good. But all these superheroes aren't perfect and have weaknesses in different ways. And another thing that fascinates me about superheroes is that they try to portray them as ordinary people. So the first superhero that was, Zorro was created in 1916. That's good. Zorro was created in 1916. And then Superman was a few years after that. And so the creators of Zorro, the first recognized hero, wanted him to fit into everyday life. They made the character a commoner before finding his inner skills, donning a mask, then protecting the people with his sword. Then we all know Superman's story, that he's a Clark Kent that works at the Daily Planet. So they made them to look like ordinary people. These creators have gone out of their way to make them normal, even though they are considered superheroes. And so I think that runs parallel with things in our life. You look at the heroes, the people in our lives that we've looked up to, and I mean, important in our lives, and superheroes of society, they've all been normal people. They've all been people that have excelled in one area or the other, but have had flaws and weaknesses in other areas as well. And so this is the backbone of our series. That God has used flawed, ordinary individuals to do some pretty amazing things. So that brings us to our next passage in tonight, looking at Hebrews 11, 30 to 38. And I'm not too sure if the thing's out, so I can... Okay, so I can read it on here. So Hebrews 11, 30 to 38. By faith, the walls of Jericho fell after the army had marched around them for 7 days. By faith, the prostitute Rahab, because she welcomed the spies, was not killed with those who were disobedient. And what shall I say? What more shall I say? I do not have the time to tell you about Gideon, Barak, Samson, Jephthah, about David and Samuel and the prophets, who through faith conquered kingdoms, administered justice, and gained what was promised, who shut the mouths of lions, quenched the fury of the flames, and escaped the edge of the sword, whose weaknesses was turned into strength, and he became powerful in battle and routed foreign enemies. Women received back their dead, raised to life again. There were many others who were tortured, refusing to be released that they might gain an even better resurrection. Some faced jeers and floggings, and even chains and imprisonment. They were put to death by stoning. They were sawed into two. They were killed by the sword. They went about in sheepskins and goatskins, destitute, persecuted, and mistreated. The world was not worthy of them. They wandered in deserts and mountains, lived in caves and holes in the ground. There's a long passage and long chunks and a lot of people mentioned in there. I'm a massive fan of the Old Testament. I was lucky enough when I did my Bible studies, theological studies, that I could get really stuck into it. And the reason why I do that, I got to learn the languages and do that sort of stuff in there as well. The reason why is because I tell stories of everyday people and the miraculous way that God works them. And then it all points to the New Testament and it all points to Jesus coming back. And so it's got this wonderful link of ordinary, everyday people doing God doing great things and stuffing up and pointing towards a Savior. And so the list of characters that we find in here a motley crew of different people. And these aren't actual pictures, by the way. But you can just see the different types of people in there. And we'll go through them now because some of them you might know and some of them you don't know. But in there is some ordinary people. So the biblical writers did not edit out the flaws of these people. They left them in there to prove an example to us. See, the men and women of the Old Testament could be gentle, holy, defenders of the faith 1 minute, and then they could be insecure, unstable, unbelieving, lying individuals the next. Just like us. They were ordinary people used by God. See, everyone here can be a hero just like they are. These are mentioned as the heroes of the faith. This passage is mentioned as that. And we can do that as well. You see, a Christian hero is not some Superman endowed with a myriad of abilities or talents. It is an individual willing to believe in God's work, commit himself to God's will, and devote himself to God's work. So let's have a look at some of these ones a bit deeper. So Rahab first. Now, as I said, some of you guys might know some of these stories already, but some of you might not. The writer of Hebrews has no issues to say that Rahab is a prostitute. And that's what she was. When Joshua sent 2 spies to scope the new land that they were going to go into, called Jericho, they came across Rahab's house. So the Israelites had found out that 2 men were coming in, and they wanted to kill these people. They came across Rahab's house. The military in Jericho got sent to Rahab's house to arrest these people. But Rahab, the prostitute, protects them. In Joshua 2:11, which is when the story happens, it says, "When we heard of it," it's in Rahab talking, "when we heard of it, our hearts melted in fear, that everyone's courage failed because of you. For the Lord your God is God in heaven above and on earth below. She understands what's happening with these people. She hears what's happening with the God of those people, and that's enough for her to believe. She has faith that these two people and the God that they believe in is going to protect her. It's pretty hard when you think about it. Two strangers knock on your door and says, hey, look after me. But this Rahab woman sees and heard about God beforehand and says, no, I trust you. I have faith in your God that I'm going to be protected by this. So when they knock on the door and ask for them, they're not here, Rahab says. She puts her faith in God and the Israelites to protect her. Then there was Gideon. So again, this story can be found in the book of Judges. Initially, Gideon starts to doubt and asks God to test him. And the story that some of you guys might know is found in Judges 6, 36 to 40. And again, Gideon said to God, if you will save Israel by my hand, as you have promised, look, I will place a wool fleece by the threshing floor. If there is dew on the fleece and all the ground is dry, then I will know that you will save Israel by my hand, as you said. And that is what happened. Gideon rose the next day. He squeezed the fleece out and wrung out the dew. A bowl full of water. Then Gideon said to God, don't be angry with me. Let me make one more request. Allow me to do one more test. But this time make the fleece dry and let the ground be covered in dew. That night God did so. Only the fleece was dry and all the ground was covered with dew. See, God called Gideon to say, you're going to take an army to defeat the Midianites. And so that was enough for Gideon. He said, look, I want to put you to test. I want to go to bed. I want to sleep on it. But to prove yourself, you know, I'm going to put this fleece there and make that dry, make that wet, and then the ground dry. And so he wakes up, that happens, and he's still not convinced. Gideon says, no, that was all good, but I still have doubts. I'm still not too sure what's going on. I want to trust you again. And so he asks the officer. And so then he wakes up the next morning, he has doubts like all of us do, but then he knows what God is doing. See, after God proving him once and twice, he finally gets it. In the next chapter, we see how big the Midianite army is. And Gideon originally assembles a man of over thousands of people. And God says, no, that's too much. That's a great chapter to read because it tells this, it's a great story. Because the Midianite has a massive, big army. And from the outskirts, it says, look, you need lots of people to find it. So Gideon gets all the men and all the people and says, this is the army that's going to defeat them. And God says, no, you've got too many people here. So they go through little tests and to see how many's got families and to see which hand they drink the water out of. And it gets down to 300 people. And so originally from a massive army, God whittles it down to 300. They go defeat this massive army that has been there for a long time. But see, with the faith of God in God that Gideon has, he defeats them. Next we have Barak. Now, it's not some reference to the last American president that's gone through. It's previous than that. And something that we probably haven't heard across. But it's found in Judges 4 and 5. So if you want to read back later, you can do that. Barak was a military leader. But he wasn't a faithful one. There was a prophet at the time called Deborah. And Deborah said he had a vision from God to say, you know, we've been oppressed for the last 20 years and you're the man that's going to take us to lead it. But Barak says, no, I don't know. I'm not too sure if it's from you or not. So he says, I'll do it, but Deborah, you have to come with me. So a prophet, woman prophet on the army wouldn't have been seen back then. They would have easily been back there. But Barak says, hey, we'll do this, but I'm not too sure. You're going to have to come with me. So again, another person that starts off having little faith or small faith, but trust God that little bit and goes away and does it. And they defeat the army that had been oppressing them for the last 20 years. Then there's Samson. And I'm going through some of these characters pretty quickly, but I'm picking up the main things. But you want to look back on it, have a listen to the audio, listen to the video, watch the video as well as listening to it, and you can pick up where these things are. But then there's Samson. Now, most people remember Samson with his long hair. He cuts it off. But Samson was a great man of God. He walked with God at the start and was dedicated to the God, and he was able to achieve lots for God. But Samson had some flaws as well. He was overcome with lust and was very self-centered and focused much more about himself and how he looked before God and anyone else. The famous story is that Samson laid with a prostitute named Delilah, and Delilah cut his hair and he lost all his strength. But then at the end, there's a time when he needs God's strength. And so he says, God, I don't care if I die today. Give me the strength now and kill these people that have been, the Philistines have been over oppressing us again. And so it does that. God gives him the strength and he kills many other people. And again, it's one of those rich stories in the Old Testament that if we had 2 hours to speak, we'd go into a little bit further. But it is really, really good. It's one of those stories, again, that God uses a flawed individual. Someone, an ordinary person that has weaknesses, that falls every now and again, like us. Then he mentions a character called Jephthah. And a story can be found in Judges 11. It has a lot of weird and wonderful names in here, so bear with me. I'll go through that, but I wanted to read this as well. Jephthah, the Gileadite warrior, his father was Gilead. His mother was a prostitute. Gilead's wife also bore him sons. And when they were grown up, they drove Jephthah away. You are not going to get any inheritance in our family, they said, because you are the son of another woman. So Jephthah fled from his brothers and settled in the land of Tob, where a gang of scoundrels gathered around him. Sometime later, the Ammonites were fighting against Israel. The elders of Gilead went to get Jephthah from the land of Tob. Come, they said, be our commander so we can fight the Ammonites. Then in verse 29 it says, then the Spirit of the Lord came on Jephthah. He crossed Gilead and Manasseh and passed through Mizpah of Gilead. And from there they advanced against the Ammonites. And Jephthah made a vow to the Lord, you give me the house of the Ammonites into my hands. Whoever comes out of the door of my house to meet me when I return in triumph from the Ammonites will be the Lord's, and I will sacrifice it as a burnt offering. And Jephthah went to fight the Ammonites. The Lord gave it to him. He devastated 20 towns from Aroer, the vicinity of Minnath, as far as Abel Karamim. Thus Israel subdued Ammon. So again, this man, who was shunned from his own family initially because he had a different mother, was outcast, and said, no, you can't be here with me. You can't be here in the Israelites. Imagine how he would have felt. And it said that a gang of scoundrels gathered around him and followed him. So the fact that they followed him almost suggests he has influence over him. So again, God is using a flawed individual. They turn him back and say, no, you're going to be the leader of our army. If you go back to the picture, he was a big soldier. He was a military man. He knew what to do. And so finally there mentioned is David and Samuel. Samuel, the last judge, the last judge in Israel. And he loved God and obeyed God. But there were times when Samuel had to make tough decisions that put him in danger. But his faith with God was great. See, Israel had been living as judges. And God appointed a judge to rule over them, to look over them. And so, you're appointed from God to look after us. But they were seeing what the other nations were. And the other nations had kings and great rulers. And they were saying, hey, we want what they've got. They seem to be doing a lot better than what we are. We want a king. So Samuel knew that it wasn't from God. But he said, God, what am I supposed to do here? So God appointed Samuel to say, okay, go find a king. And then again, they wanted to find David, but they appointed Saul because Saul was the biggest and strongest man in that point in time. But God wasn't happy with that. So Samuel again had to say, where's our king? Who's going to be our king? So that's when he appoints David, and you know that. So again, the time when Samuel was here was a time when we had lots of struggles and lots of issues. And he made it faithful to God in the midst of all this other stuff going around. And then David, the last one mentioned there. Now, David is probably one of my favorite characters in the Bible because he's a great man of God and he does so much. From humble beginnings of being the smallest of the little of the family, plays his harp, then becomes a great leader. But he does stuffs up so much as well. There are times in there where he commits adultery. The story in the Bible where, you know, they had their baths on top of their roofs. So he's gone up on his roof to have a bit of a chill out session. And he looks over and sees another woman having a bath on there. He says, oh, I want that. I want that. And he finds out that she's got a husband. And he says, oh, that's not going to stop me. I'll just make him a commander in my army and send him out to battle and have him killed so I can have her. And so he does that. And other times as well in the Old Testament, into the story of David, how that happens as well. And so David is one of those guys that we hear so much about. And he is depicted as this great man of the Bible. But at the same time, he's a flawed individual. He struggles with things just like we do. Yet they all have the faith in God and they get to achieve great things. I want to touch on the second half of the verse. So, starting from verse 35. There were others who were tortured, refusing to be released so that they may gain an even better resurrection. Some faced jeers and flogging, even chains and imprisonment. They were put to death by stoning. They were sawed in two. They were killed by the sword. They went about in sheepskins and goatskins, destitute, persecuted, and mistreated. The world was not worthy of them. They wandered in deserts and mountains, living in caves and in holes in the ground. Seems a bit odd to put this in there sometimes. And if you go through the Old Testament, it is one of those stories that would fit perfectly in a Game of Thrones type scenario type of thing, because it has got all this blood and gore in there. And so Hebrews puts that in there. The author of Hebrews puts it in there. So why do you think he puts it in there? This is a conclusion I came up with. Firstly, it shows the lengths that people went for their faith. That these guys had faith in God in the face of persecution, right up until the end, until they were sawed in two. Right up in the end, until they got stoned to death. They had faith in God. They might have slid back here and there, but they had faith in God. See, when I think about that, it's an inspiration to me. Think about how hard it is sometimes that we struggle with to be faithful and to keep the things that hold close to us. And so when I read about what these guys suffered through, I was going to guess, we can do it. We've got a God that's going to be with us all the time. And the other reason why is I think it proves to us that Christianity isn't going to be an easy life. You know, there is that misconception that when you become a Christian, that everything's going to get a little bit easier. And Matt Carson did a wonderful thing this morning about that, talked a bit in his message this morning about that sort of thing. So if you do have time, listen to the audio about that. But being a Christian doesn't mean you're immune to bad things happening to you. Life is still going to happen. You might get sawed into, probably not, but bad things will happen still. But have the confidence, like these people did, that God is with you. That God is not going to forsake you. That God is not going to leave you. See, the difference is that we have someone with us all the time. We have something walking with us. We have someone that when we go through bad stuff is hurting just as much as we do. See, Jesus died on the cross for us. He's wanting us to have a relationship with him. So we are not alone. We still have difficult times, but he walks with us. And I want to pause there for a side there that if you ever hear or want to know more about that, that you just don't know where you stand with God and you don't know where you stand in your relationship with God, have a talk to us. If you hear about how you want to have a relationship or you want to go stronger with God and that doesn't make much sense, have a talk to us about that. I think we can all call times in our lives when we have struggled with things, when we had to hit those rocky patches, and it has been a bit of a struggle for us. There's been times in our lives when we've been, think of ourselves as one of those people. We might have been like Rahab and not been strong with God or not known who God was, but heard about him, but then all of a sudden, yeah, I want to have faith in him. Might have been like Jephthah, one of those people that have been shunned away from their family and friends. Maybe gotten with a bad crew or something like that. And then all of a sudden there's a moment where you turn back to God. Maybe Samson, where you've been lustful or too focused on yourself. But in the end, he has faith in God. And see, the writer of Hebrews picks up on this and said, yes, these have flawed individuals. We are ordinary people, but they have done some amazing things for God. So wrapping up, I use these stories as an inspiration to me. And I hope that they are to you as well. So these people worked through their flaws and became great people of great faith. They didn't get caught up in what they had done. They didn't get caught up in the circumstances around them. They didn't get caught up in the things going on in their head. They gave it to God. They had faith in God to say, yes, I can move mountains. I can do things for you. See, Jesus came to die for us. That cross over there is a symbol that he died for us. And so we can move on. We can have a clean slate. Anything that we have done in the past, anything that's bothering us, we can give it up to God and say, hey, I don't want this anymore. See, I have no doubt there will be stories of us in heaven. It's like God and the writers of Hebrews have written about Samson. Now, they're going to be writing stories of Phoebe and Matt and Jen, and they're going to be writing those stories in there. They're going to be telling those stories up there in heaven as well. I have no doubt about that. They're going to be telling stories of you guys and about us, of the faithful things that we have done. And some things we will be able to recognize, but other things we won't until we get up to heaven. See, so let these passages inspire you. Think about how you can turn that little bit of faith that you've got into bigger faith. So as we said at the start, you know, God doesn't want perfect people. He's looking for faithful people. And so when I think about that, when I think about how God can work me, and how when I think about how God can work in you guys, I get excited about that. So have a think about what you can do, the things you can achieve for God by having a bit more faith. Those little things that nudges on your heart that say, yeah, I should be doing this, so I could do that. God has put them on there. Let these stories be inspiration to you. Let us pray. Dear Heavenly Father, we thank you for the stories. We thank you for the Old Testament. We thank you for the Bible. We thank you for your people that have done so much for you. That even though they were flawed, they were ordinary people, they were still able to achieve things for you. So Lord, when we think about ourselves, it's so easy to get caught up on why we shouldn't be doing something, or why we can't do something, or what we have done in the past. But Lord, the cross covers that. So we should be thinking about how we can do more things with you. So Lord, encourage us this week. Inspire us to do your work. We just pray these things in your mighty name. Amen.